and welcome to Focus on the Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and today's interview is the first in a series in honor of 44 Days of Autism Acceptance and Inclusion. And with us today from Autism Delaware, we have its Executive Director, Brian Hall, and Daphne Carnwright, Interim Director of Family Support. And welcome you two. Welcome.
Welcome, and thank you for having us. It's a pleasure to be with you this day.
This is April, and autism is top of mind each year at this time. But for so many families, it's a day-to-day existence, 365 days of the year, 24/7. And of course, you are there with amazing support and programming. And so let's get started with, what is autism spectrum disorder?
So autism is a neurodevelopmental disability that impacts the person's world and how they learn from their experiences. It often brings some significant social communication challenges for the person. There are core clusters of symptoms that kind of present challenges that people with autism have. It looks different in different people, though. So there's a saying that if you met one person with autism, you've met one person with autism, because it can present a little differently in everyone.
And sometimes that presentation, some people might think of it as we see that presentation as a strength. I mean, every person is individual, and you know, one might, you know, might need to run around the yard to calm down. And sometimes we should be running around the yard to calm down before we engage in a conversation of some sort. So it's not that we view the difference as a negative thing. It's just who that person is as an individual, and we accept each other as they are.
The actual diagnosis seems to be, though, a fairly recent thing. When did we start recognizing autism as a distinct personality trait?
Well, I can't give you the exact year. I just know back in the early 90s, we used to talk about pervasive developmental disorder. And that has grown into more of an autistic diagnosis. And you know, someone who is diagnosed as autism really is presents with a certain set of behaviors. You know, it's no different. You know, some of the things anyone else might display, it's just they may not have the number or the routine display of those behaviors, but really it's just behavior. And so I remember the early years, and I'll say the early years back in the early 90s, you know, we just said, you know, these kids are just a little different. You know, but they had strengths that were unmatched compared to some other kids. I mean, some kids could tell you the history and could hack a computer at age 7. I mean, we just were kind of learning these kids way back when. But I don't have an exact day because, you know, behaviors have existed forever. It's just we as a society have gotten better at kind of categorizing the disorders and, I mean, the symptomology in a way that allows us to come up with a general perception of what autistic-like behaviors may be.
And it was in 2013 that the diagnostic criteria were revised and changed to autism spectrum disorder. There was a lot of talk in the community about autism being viewed as kind of a spectrum, and that became an official in the title in 2013 in that revision.
I remember when we used to hear the term Asperger, we'd mm-hmm. hear other terminology mm-hmm. used at times. Mm-hmm. So if this is obviously a spectrum, because it can be very impactful on a life, or it could be fairly unnoticeable. And so how do you actually say that this is then autism spectrum disorder? What is there any one thing that says this gives you this diagnosis?
There are kind of clusters that we look at, and one is the social and communication skills and challenges of the person, and the other is restrictive and repetitive patterns of behavior or interest that we may see. And the person has to have kind of some challenges in those two areas in order to qualify for a diagnosis. And that's what I think professionals are looking at when they're doing the autism evaluations.
Well, Brian, as you mentioned, that actually includes almost all of us at some point in the day.
Absolutely.
Or in the course of the week. So how hard and how difficult is it for a family to get a diagnosis? And are we getting more and more diagnoses because we're better adept at recognizing these patterns?
I would have to say yes. I mean, the The challenge over the years has just been the number of qualified individuals being able to provide a comprehensive diagnosis for an individual. And, you know, and there's all kind of issues that impact one's ability to receive such an evaluation. But even considering those challenges, whether they are rural challenges or urban environment challenges or cultural challenges, we as a society have been able to improve in our ability to identify those sets of behaviors that should lead to more, lead to some sort of diagnosis, whether it's a spectrum diagnosis or some other diagnosis. Because sometimes for some individuals that are just not as clearly presenting a certain set of behaviors, it can look like something else, a communication disorder or something, some other kind of disorder. So I would say, generally speaking, it's due to improved ability and the amount of providers available to complete these more comprehensive assessments.
When do you get a diagnosis usually? At what point does a family find out that their child's behavior qualifies for this diagnosis? And how common is it now?
That's an interesting question, because the answer is that it varies. We do know that, you know, the earlier the assessment we can do in a person's life, the better outcomes that we see. So early identification is widely regarded as an important piece. And, you know, Delaware has undertaken some efforts to help our communities, you know, work towards that earlier assessment and identification. You probably saw last month or the month before that the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, and also the Autism and Developmental Disability Monitoring Network. Those are groups that we look for to help us understand more about the prevalence of autism spectrum disorder. And they shared some new numbers that folks have probably heard of. And I'll start, you know, back in history, when did we know? Some prevalence numbers from 1995, the CDC said that one in every 2,500 births was a person with autism. And then in 2009, it was one in 110. 2020, the number was one in 54. And then this year, the CDC released the new number that people have hopefully have heard recently, one in 44 people have autism now. So you see that change in the numbers that you were talking about a minute ago.
So again, is this better diagnosis, or are we actually seeing more kids born with this disorder?
Well, I think it's a combination of both. Mm-hmm. I think it's improved diagnosis and more kids just having behavioral challenges that may not have been captured in prior years for multiple reasons, whether it's a family's resistance to seek out medical help because of their cultural experiences. It could be multiple factors that impact one's willingness to seek out further diagnosis and evaluation.
Mm-hmm. And we've seen numbers in public schools, too. We have some reports from the Department of Ed about numbers of students in Delaware schools who have a special education eligibility and classification as a student with autism. The most recent numbers were 2,326 students ages 5 to 12. And 371 students aged 3 to 5 qualified under the educational regulations as a student with autism and qualified for an IEP, an individual education program. So in total, that's 2,697 in the 2020 to 2021 school year students in Delaware. Now, keep in mind, that's not students who are homeschooled or in a private school or maybe misidentified or not yet identified. Those are the students that have completed an assessment at school and meet the eligibility criteria and are offered special education services.
Before we get into education and the programming that you offer, what do we know about autism? Does it run in families? Is there someone who is more likely than another to have a child with autism? Do we have any research that is helpful at this point?
We do know that it's 4 times more common in boys than in girls. We do still have girls with autism, but it is more common in boys. Otherwise, it really knows no bounds. It can affect anyone from any socioeconomic class, any ethnicity, any race, any area of the country. They are exploring some genetic components, and some folks are engaging in, you know, genetic, some studies around genetics and seeing what impact that may have. But really, anyone, you know, could have autism.
Daphne, you mentioned early diagnosis is very important. important. And we've talked a little bit about education now. For a family that gets this diagnosis, they're lost. They are surprised, possibly, or they are resigned. They are scared. Navigation, getting them through all of these things. Jump in there. Wrestle that to the ground.
And that's part of why Autism Delaware exists, is we're here to help families through that process. We have staff available, staff who are trained, staff who are also parents of children on the spectrum, ready and waiting to help those families to navigate the systems. It's complex. When you get news that your child has autism, no one really kind of hands you a manual and says, your child has autism, this is what you do. But we hope to help fill in that gap and walk that journey with families. Our staff, many of them are parents. We've been there, we understand, and we have training to support another family. So we're here to support them through that journey. We're here to help them understand how special education works. We're here to help them learn advocacy skills as they're advocating for their children. We're here to help them understand all the services that are out there and find resources that meet the needs that they're concerned about.
One of the things I'd like to add in there is that, you know, we're at a time in this society where, you know, we're hoping that we're coming out of this pandemic. And as an organization, one of the things I'm so proud of is the fact that we never closed our doors through this entire pandemic. So we're still providing services, and the services that Daphne has just spoke about, virtually throughout this entire time. The biggest challenge has been simply just not having enough personnel to continue to support the families across the state in their time of need. But also because of the impact this pandemic has had on the external sources, hospitals and doctor's offices and so forth, families have not been able to get all the services that they've had in the past. So it really continues to impact our ability to service the numbers of families who may be needing the kinds of services that we wrap and walk the path with on a daily basis around here.
You're there from birth right through school, through jobs, through living outside, all the way through the life cycle there.
Yes. And I think, you know, one of the things, I'm so proud that we continue to service families throughout this period. But one of the things, the only reason why we're able to do that is because of the great families and individuals across the state of Delaware and businesses that have just reached out and supported us through our campaigns that we've had, whether it's our walk each year that we have, or our Blue Jean Ball down in Sussex County that we all have such a great time at. It's because of the ongoing commitment of folks that we've been able to service families, not only from first diagnosis, but through our creative, what we call our supported living model. But we've got, you know, currently three families up in the Newcastle area because it's been slow to expand. But we've got families who are individuals who are living on their own. They're going to work. We're supporting them at work, and they're coming home to their own environments. And it's a partnership that's unique because it partners not only with the Division of Developmental Disability Services, but it partners with families. Families are on that journey with us as they try to establish a place for their child in their local community where they're familiar and understand the neighbors and know the neighbors and all that, because that's the thing that's important. And we always talk about, we like to create opportunities for people to remain in their communities and do the things that they want to do in their communities with the support of each other.
You just touched upon growing up. And so you have programming for the smallest child through the working with the school system, getting someone a job, getting them integrated into the community, finding homes. You're there every step of the way with some type of a program.
Yes. I mean, that's our niche. I think it's always been, we don't necessarily try to duplicate anything. We try to find that gap and then work around that gap area, because usually the gap is, you know, for example, and Daphne spoke a little bit about it, our ACT program, which is families supporting families. You can't get any stronger or best represent your community by having someone in your community who's gone through that journey and those tasks reaching out to you and supporting you in your time of need. You know, sometimes this journey, and everyone has a different journey, sometimes the journey is really lonely, isolating, and you know, you don't know what the next day or the next minute's going to bring. And being able to have a resource available that you can just pick up the phone and call or email to, and hopefully we can get back to you as soon as we can, because, you know, we have our own staffing challenges like this, like the world does right now. But really being there in that time of need. And then when they get older, you know, because of our unique model of vocational services, where We don't have buildings. The people, the 180 people plus that we service in our adult services, they're not in any building. They only do what they do because we partner with businesses like yourself, ShopRite, Bally's Now, Lowe's, these organizations, Walmart. We work with individuals across the state in all these different places and providing an array of supports and paying taxes like we all do. And you never know who we are because, you know, we don't run around with a big Autism Delaware shirt on our back. Our kids, and I say kids, but our young adults and families are out there just working and getting up and going to work like you and me every day. But you never know that because we don't have a place where everyone comes to and you can see everybody in action, because the idea is you need to be in your own community. You need to be in your own community giving back and figuring out and learning the, you know, the everyday things that make you a part of that community.
We're going to be talking to Kat about the job placement services, the career path planning. And one of the great things about that, I know, is that when somebody gets a job through this programming, part of the process is also identifying a way to be a part of the community and figuring out a way to again, integrate in and have a social life where you're giving back and being a part of your neighborhood, too. But now I digress, because we'll talk about that in depth another time. But this is Focus on the Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today from Autism Delaware, we have the Executive Director, Brian Hall, and Daphne Carnwright. She is the Interim Director of Family Support. And for more information about the programming and all the services that are offered by Autism Delaware, go to autismdelaware.org. That's autismdelaware.org. And they do have a phone number, too, 302-224-6020. But we'll repeat that. And of course, the website gives you that information, too, autismdelaware.org. You work with everybody who interacts with people with autism. You work with businesses. You help them set up programming for future employees or current employees. You work with organizations to do open events where families can go and enjoy themselves. You want to talk a little bit about some of that work?
Oh, yeah. I highlighted a little bit, though, but I think the idea here is we have different ways that we can engage the community. We have our walks, you know, and most people know about our walks because that's our biggest event, you know. In Sussex County, where we've historically had our walk in Sussex, you know, it can be anywhere from 800 to 1,500 people show up for a day, or in Newcastle could be anywhere from 2,500 to 5,000 people show up for a day. And, you know, my staff will laugh because I don't describe the walks as walks. To me, they're family reunions because, you know, it's an opportunity. We have them once a year and families keep coming back. And what does that do for me as the executive director? I get a chance to ask them how their year has been. And they catch me up on the good things, the bad things, the challenges, and not so good. And I get to share with them. And it's just like coming together. You see your family at a family reunion. And, you know, we're here to celebrate each other's and each other's individual. And these teams show up in all kinds of colors and designs and logos. And it's not, you know, it's only about to celebrate. It's to celebrate their child and to celebrate the need and awareness and acceptance of their child. And that's one, those are our bigger men. Then we have, you know, we have our Blue Jean Ball, for example, which happens in Sussex County. And that is a blast. Everyone comes out and bling and, you know, in their jeans. And people just have a really good time listening to local bands. And I can't even tell you how happy I am with all of the restaurants down in Sussex County who in particular for that event, they donate their time, they donate their resources to ensure that, you know, we are really wrapping around and supporting this community, because it takes those kinds of events to help us in times like we've been going through, when, you know, we hadn't had, you know, even though we kept our doors open and we paid staff without work, we only were able to do that because of all the commitments people have made to this organization over the years. And that's the reason why we never shut our doors. Even when folks, we didn't have work, because if the businesses are not open, where do our guys and gals go? Where do our staff go? There's no place to go because we are a community-based business. And so because of the years and years of fundraising and all these other, and the generosity of our Delaware community, we were able to keep staff on board. Now, we lost staff, like we all, and some of us were highly infant. We've lost loved ones during this last year. But, you know, we come back to, you know, the staff we have are so committed to the work that goes on here and supporting individuals. It just, you know, it's a blessing to be around them.
And they really dedicated, you know, our staff did, their attention to the clients that they're serving, the families that they're working with and walking that journey with, even though they themselves were also going through challenges related to COVID and the pandemic and their child's class closing for a week because of a COVID outbreak. So when they were supporting their families, they understood all of those pieces too and kept providing that support and kept connecting with those families and everyone supporting each other. You know, we didn't stop. We didn't miss a beat. And I hope that families in the community, you know, continue to call us and join in and join that support and get support from our team.
And I think it's important, you know, all those good things, I think, Laura, I think it's important to say we recognize that there's a lot of families out there we have not been able to serve. Mm-hmm. And we just, you know, it's not that, you know, that's the hardest part of my job when I can't service someone and it's out of my control. And a lot of it has to do with a lot of the staffing challenges we're facing as a society. And you know, and having, you know, or having people who have been in your program not be able to be served because you no longer have those staff and you can't recruit staff, and telling family got to wait and wait and wait, you know, because we just, things are out of our control. Everyone, you know, you could sit with any of the directors at Autism Dell, and most of them tell you we're all out doing the work because we're doing our best to try to wrap around and support our community. We know we don't have the staff, and we know there needs to be much more done. We know we need to be higher reimbursement rates for the services that we're providing across the state to be able to attract more staff to this work. So there's a lot of systems things that need to happen that enable organizations like Autism Delaware and others to do this work.
I know that this last year, these last 2 years now, had to have been pure hell on these families because, of course, families and kids lost, and adults lost structure in that year. And that's very, very important to your clients. And now families are dealing with getting back into schools and making sure that kids, you know, gain back what they lost. And that's another touching kind of, finally, I get to my point here, touching upon another important thing that you do. It's not just direct programming. You speak for the community and you advocate for them. You mentioned reimbursement. Do government officials, do the locals understand what you need and what families are looking for? And give us some success stories.
I mean, if you want to talk about advocacy, I mean, we've had some success stories, and which include getting some rates increased over the last few years. Daphne can talk about some legislation, but there's much more work to be done. And it's not just Autism Delaware. I mean, our families are in multiple organizations, multiple family groups that are coming together in this time and advocating not only in the state level, but the national level and hopes of increasing reimbursement rates so that, you know, it's these caregivers, these DSPs, direct service professionals, whether they're at family support professional or direct support vocational services professional, these folks are the ones who will be with your children when you are gone. And we should have a system in place that really reimburses them in a way to demonstrate their commitment they're making to your child, your daughter, your grandparent, your mother. You know, we're all in the same category, fighting for the same resources, and we need to continue to support the community in going out and securing higher reimbursement rates. And I mean, there's a lot of things that we can demonstrate how the success of having these kind of programs in a community have benefited the community. Daphne, you could talk a little bit about the successes.
Yeah, and family support, you know, we've done a lot of advocacy with state systems and, like, for example, the Department of Education. Our staff serve on state level committees, speaking on behalf of and advocating for the needs of people with autism and their families. We do the same, as Brian mentioned, legislatively here at Autism Delaware every year. We are speaking to legislators and informing families about bills that are on the table that may have an impact on their lives or the lives of people with disabilities. And we have had a lot of successes. We've had some bills passed in Delaware that created, for example, the ICA, the Interagency Committee on Autism, that brings together stakeholders from around the state and different agencies who are meeting regularly. And that came from legislation that many families and many stakeholders helped to advocate for, to bring into creation, so that we could together, as a group of people who care about autism and care about people affected by autism and the services that they get, can meet regularly to kind of move forward in improving our services in our state, keeping watch on what services we have and where the gaps are, where the shortages are, and bringing people together to try to address those needs on a regular basis.
And we can't, I mean, be honest, we cannot address everything. We do our best to try to take on issues that come up. But, you know, it's the ability to be able to work collaboratively with our community partners, whether systems, whether government, whether there are other groups. It takes all of us to change things in our world of work. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, in our world where we live, it just takes a lot of pieces to come together to create change.
Well, we're coming towards the end here, and I think I'll be directing this probably to you, Brian. Where do you see Autism Delaware going? What's coming in the future? Do you have great plans? You've seen it grow. You've seen it change over the years. You've been there a while, haven't you?
I have been here a while. You know, I want to think that every day is something different. And every day, I hope to see something significantly happen in the lives of the people we serve around the state of Delaware. Next year, we'll be celebrating our 25th anniversary, which is amazing. And you know, I think that, you know, every year brings something new. We try something new. And sometimes we take a step back and repeat something we haven't done in a while, because that's what families need. I think we will continue to work with our community around identifying gaps and trying to problem solve to address those gaps. So I like to say that in the years to come, we will continue to serve families. There'll be more communities supporting more communities. But most importantly, I want our families to be able to be a part of an integrative acceptance, be a part of their communities and be able to walk to the store or go to the store and just be another person at the store, be able to go to a camp and just be another kid at the camp, be able to go to a restaurant and sit down and, you know, if they have a little uniqueness about them that everyone else says, no big deal, and just continues to enjoy their meal. And if the family seems to be a little stressed, someone just comes over and says, don't worry, honey, we got you. You know, that's what I'm looking for, because we're a family. No matter how you look at it, we are a family.
And as the director of family support, Daphne, how do we get involved with you? How do we help you in your work?
Well, you know, we're doing part of that today. Thank you so much for inviting us to talk to you and be on your show. That really means a lot to us. We're excited to tell people about our services and bring those services to families. So, you know, one way people can help is tell your friends, tell your family that you heard us on the radio today and that we're here for families affected by autism. We're ready. We're ready to support you. We're ready every single day. And so give us a call. We can help. Get engaged in some of our activities. Brian was talking about the walk. We're going to have the walk in this year. Find out about that. Create a team. Come hang out with us for the day. See how amazing our families are. And we love to, in family support, also help inspire hope amongst families. You said earlier, it can be quite challenging sometimes. We want to use that strength-based approach and help families see the good things and the awesome things that are coming to their future and know that they're going to be supported all along the way. So join in with us, find out more about us, call one of us. We'll tell you more. We'll tell you anything you want to know.
Exactly. And thank you, Daphne. And just so you know, thank you. And you know, I mentioned it, you know, and you started off by saying, yes, it's April. And we know what April is. We know April 2nd is World Autism Day. We, you know, and be on the lookout for, you know, resources that come up through Autism Delaware, whether it's email through our website or social media, different things that are happening across it. And you can get involved. If you want to do something to just, you know, reflect on your experience or just want to do something just to acknowledge it in your own kind of way, why don't you send us an email? Let us know about it. And because then, you know, hopefully we might be able to get it on a counter and share with the world what you're doing to create a more inclusive environment for us all.
Yes.
Well, I think we all know if we do not have someone in our family, we know someone who does. We all live with autism now. And so for more information about the programming, about the advocacy work, about the opportunities for you to get involved, whether it's the Blue Jean Ball or it's the walks that are coming up, maybe you're a business You want to establish a quiet corner, or you would like to have a quiet day, or you would like to find out how you can hire somebody through their programming, their employment programming. It's all found at autismdelaware.org. To reach out to Family Support directly, you can always call them at 302-224-6020, extension 219, but nobody is going to be able to remember that, so just go to autismdelaware.org, and you'll be able to find the program. You'll be able to find the contact that you need right there. It's a great website. And here's where I say thank you very much to Brian Hall. He is the executive director, and Daphne Carnwright, she is the interim director of Family Support for Autism Delaware. Thank you both.
Thank you.
And here's to a great April and 44 days of autism acceptance and inclusion. I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Focus on the Delaware Valley.